You're watching Thorin's YouTube channel. Please seek professional help.
When it comes to the art of marketing, you could say I've got it down to a T because I'm just that good, aren't I? In fact, I'm so good. Some would say when it comes to ideas, my cup runneth over, so I've got drinks to share. Now, speaking of sharing drinks, did you know Gamersups, where obviously you can use my code Thorin for 10% off, THORIN at gamersups.gg, they don't just sell their delicious energy formula. They've got a new drink, haven't they? And it's actually Gamersups tea, believe it or not. They've got four different types. They've got, let's see, they've got the black tea, classic. They've got the sleep time with theanine. If you don't know, theanine, it's like a supplement I actually already take anyway that promotes sleep and not waking up during the night, etc. They've got a yerba mate, quite a classic tea there. And then they've got the ginger and turmeric, obviously good things to take, help with your health, etc., immune system, all that jazz. And obviously, it goes without saying, the one that's the theanine one, obviously, is caffeine-free. That one's to go to sleep, to get you sleep at night. Obviously, by the way, should pair great with classic Gamersups, right? Like all the great flavours, pink grapefruit, guacamole, Gamefat 9000. Because you can have that in the day, have it in the morning or lunch, get your day's work done, have your energy, and then at night, have your little tea, no caffeine in it, come off your phone for an hour, go to bed, lovely, innit? There you go, taking care of business. Also, right now, they have an offer where if you buy a shaker, you can get a free box of tea along with it. So remember to use my code Thorin at the checkout if you want to support me and get some delicious Gamersups formula or Gamer tea. And by the way, if you do so, don't forget to put some free samples in so you can try some of the other flavors. Now, this is going to be an episode in my Principles of CS series where the whole point was I wanted to lay out like bigger picture, like analytical lenses, models I use in the game. And people will know this is one of the videos I've procrastinated the longest in my entire career. Like you could go back to, I'm going to guess probably like, it's got to be like early by the numbers. I'd say like maybe even 2016, 2017, you'll hear me talking about this concept, maybe even 2015, where when we would talk and me and Richard would talk about like a new roster move or a team's made a roster move and it hasn't worked out and you question like, should they like go back? Should they get a different player? Should they keep this player and add someone? The question would always come, how long do you give a team before you sort of decide, right, that's enough. Like I've seen enough. I know who this team is. And so what I did was, from observation, I came up with my own principle. So basically, the idea was when someone either makes a totally new lineup or a roster move, how do you know if it's worked out or not? Obviously, at the first tournament they play, what if they win the tournament? Oh, does that mean it definitely worked? Not necessarily. Sometimes teams tank after that. And it was just a fluke. What if it goes horrible at the first tournament? Would you boot someone immediately after that? Of course not, right? You've got to give them a couple more chances. People don't remember when FaZe brought Olufmeister and Guardian. They bombed out in the group stage of DreamHack Masters Malmö. Spoiler, the next two events they played at, they didn't win or lose a series. They were 2-0 on everyone. ESL New York and E-League Premier, depending on which order you want to go in. So the point I came up with is, I think people in general gave, first of all, they overreacted to the first one or two lands, but then the other way around, if they just like something about the lineup or the team or the players, they would give it way too long. They'd be giving lineups 6 months. There'd be lineups that were once great lineups that now played together for over a year, and people are acting like they're just going to bounce back in like month 15 and get to the level they're at in month 5 when they're at their absolute peak. So in general, I thought people like overreacted at the beginning, then underreacted later on when it was clearly too long. And also players play into this as well. Like players, if they like the lineup and the player they brought in, they'll essentially argue for almost unlimited time. Like people will be talking about the idea like this, you can't really judge our lineup until 5 months in. Well, you know, we've only had the lineup for 6 months. We're still working some things. And I'd always think, like, well, what are you going to do in these months? Like, what are you going to do in this month that you haven't done in the other 6 months, in the other whatever 10 lands you might have played at that point in time? So my observation became, as the title suggests, mostly people already remember the latter part. Basically, as a time span, roughly 3 months. That's also, by the way, why I then set my world rankings, which I invented before HLTV had a world rankings. I set mine at a hard 3 month window. Although the mistake I made was I didn't count the player break. Or rather, I shouldn't have counted the player break. But okay, can't go back in time now, can we? The other angle, though, is either 3 months. And the reason I made it 3 months is so that that way, if that you don't attend a LAN or you bomb a couple of them early, you still have a bit of time to recover. Or the other one was, if you want like an actual tournament length, How about 3 to 4 lands attended? Because from what I can tell, after 3 to 4 lands, we're going to know who your team is. Because think about it, right? That gets a lot of the flukes out the way. That gets your first land out the way. That gives you your follow-up land. That gives you like a good result. Then you have to back that up. Or you have a bad result, then you got to bounce back. But it gives you enough time. Like 3 or 4 lands really is going to give you like a bunch of group draws, bunch of bracket draws, a fluke here. You steal a game here, you get unlucky here, you have an average game here, you have your best game, you have your worst game. You're going to see it all, and then you're going to know who they are at that point in time. So I would say, in general, I would default to the latter. I would say, in the past, I would have gone on the 3 months criteria. Now, I would actually reverse the criteria, and I would say I would heavily skew more towards it's 3 to 4 months. As in, if it's 3 months and they didn't play 3 lands yet, I wouldn't count that as the time period. And the reason why I say now I would switch and reverse is because the LAN circuit used to be so active before that when you are the great teams like NIP back in the early CS, Fnatic in 2015, you're going to be like Virtus Pro in 2016. When you go to these time periods, you're going to see that these teams can play like 3 lands in a month sometimes. They can get like 10 lands in 3, 4, 5 months or something. So they would play a lot back then because there were a lot more tier 2, tier 3, tier 1.5 events. Now, the circuit's a lot smaller, and I would say now it's more like in about 3 or 4 month span, you might play 2 or 3 lands, maybe 3 or 4. So instead, I'd say actually now, it's more like give them the 3 or 4 lands just because that's the longer, the bigger period at this point in time. It's kind of flipped, it's 180 in that regard. So I think that's when you really will know who the modern day good teams are, whereas maybe for a Fnatic or a VP back in the day could just go off the 3 to 4 lands or the 3 months roughly. Now, reasons as to why I think this is, but I'll show you some very good examples in history to highlight what I'm talking about, is because, like, first of all, it gives you a chance to get a boot camp. Within 3 to 4 months, you're going to have had 1 boot camp, as in at least, like, be at home and play, have, like, a week to practice and board up on some strats and some maps and get your playbooks in. If not during that time period, you're going to have one big event. Might be a kind of E-Circle or a Major, an RMR, whatever, and you're going to go and do a week's boot camp. That boot camp, by the way, essentially is going to be the majority of what you're going to be able to fix. If you can't get it done in that boot camp, you're probably not going to actually long-term develop it, unless it's some sort of, like, bigger picture, like macro concept or stylistic tweak that you need, in which case you may end up being an exception to the rule. But for most teams, the bootcamp's going to figure out how good you are. You're going to know who you are from those scrims. And as I say, you can only fix so much. I actually think the idea of fixing things in practice is overrated. Practice is for establishing what we want to do, then working on execution, and then hoping people get their individual forms together and get their level of individual play up. Beyond that, we can make tweaks, we can alt things, we can prepare for opponents, but we're not going to fundamentally overhaul our entire style. We're not going to overhaul our whole map pool. We're not going to radically change and make the same 5-man lineup 200% better. It's not going to happen. It's not going to, and hopefully it's not going to get 50% better, but obviously that can happen if things go badly. I think one of the reasons why is I think chemistry, teamwork, like the way you play off each other, has an almost natural component or like a logical, like I would say, natural in the sense it doesn't have to be forced. It doesn't have to artificially always be built up. I've always said, if teams, I think it's the same for comms, communicating as well. If teams have really bad communication and people speak like really scoffed second language English and all that, and you're having to work at it for months and months and months, you're just building like artificial scaffolding of some basics that can get you through the round. The team that speaks the same language and understand each other, they're just going to immediately understand each other from the same country. And then people who speak the same language, similar culture, and they vibe with each other and their styles already work from the beginning. They've just got such an insane advantage on you. It doesn't matter how many months you have. You're not going to get to that level, probably. It's unlikely you're going to exceed it. So, and also, they're working on comms too in their practices as well. So for me, I also think another aspect is that I think a lot of the style of how teams play isn't determined. Like the in-game leader doesn't go off into a room and then sit there meditating and then like go off into the astral realms and access the Akashic record for how to play CS. What he does is he plays a bunch of scrims while looking at the players he's got in his lineup and who he's getting into it and how they've played previously. And it's a puzzle. He tries to fit the pieces together and see, right, does that fit here? It's like playing with old school Legos where you have all the Legos from different kits together, but you or making a new thing that wasn't a particular thing you had the blueprint for. So you're trying to make a spaceship. Like, do I have enough things for the wing? Do I have the wheels? Do I have the thing here? So you're trying to set it up. That's what the end game leader is doing with the style and with the way that they're going to play the game. He doesn't have that much choice. He looks at his personnel. He has a sense of how he likes to call the game and he likes to play it. And then he also has to figure out what are his opponents like? Who are we trying to beat? What type of opponents are we actually going to be facing up with? And what are we going to need in our team? What weapons do we need in the toolkit? So I think the efficacy of the lineup in practices in the early hands is going to tell you you. That feedback loop, the results are going to tell you whether it is working and you're doing the right thing. Again, there is only so much you can change. You can't take a team that plays like classic slow Counter-Strike where everyone wants to just check every cut. You're not going to get that team to play some super fast up-tempo rush Counter-Strike like classic Furia a few years back. Likewise, you're not going to go another way where you have like a really loose face style team and then make them play super slow grind out Counter-Strike like Na'Vi played a couple of years ago, where it was everything was about like those massive dossiers and what Blade wanted and what his conception of perfect Counter. You're not going to do that either, because you wouldn't have as much success. It'd actually be worse for you. And so you stick within the wheelhouse of what works for your personnel and within the scene of your peers and who you're competing against. Also, the other reason why 3-4 lands or 3 months in this case, if you want to make it bigger, like for example, maybe some of the lands were smaller ones or not that important, or there wasn't that many good teams there. This is to allow you to pick one or the other. And by the way, it's not a hard and fast rule. It's obviously a lens, isn't it, to apply. The reason 3-4 lands also works, in my opinion, is because it's enough sample size, as I alluded to before. Like, it allows you to have an upset yourself, but then prove you're not that legit from it. It allows you to get upset, but then bounce back and show that you are better overall on aggregate. It allows you a really bad group stage draw or bad bracket draw. Like, maybe you just face the best team in the world, who's beaten everyone, like G2 or Vitality earlier this year. Maybe you face them in the quarterfinals or the round of 12 in Pro League. Well, then, yeah, you're going to go out 9th to 12th, aren't you? But actually, you might be the third best team there. So it gives you a chance for everything to even out, essentially. 3-4 lands or 3 months, 3 months especially, is usually with a good lancer. You're going to be plenty of time for all these things to even themselves out. And then you've also got 3 months to actually give yourself a chance to develop everything. So you can develop your game, your style, your map pool, what roles people are going to have, your comms. You can have your ups and downs of team performance, of individual form, people adapting to maps, the team adapting to them. You can have all this stuff. Then the opponent is a factor within this as well, and how well you do, right? So now the opponent has 3-4 lands or 3 months to figure you out. They can potentially neutralize you. They can figure out what maps to draw against you. They can find edges based on what worked for you. They can counter what you've done. They can exploit your weaknesses. Or maybe they can't do any of those things, and in trying, you just rise to the top and we say you're one of the best teams in Counter-Strike. That is a big component. It's why there are teams who have that breakout first one or two lands, but does it continue? Like, let's be real. Even if Imma and Shuhi had stayed in Gamer Legion, were they going to have a run like that major one again? I think not, personally. Maybe they could have been like a really outside, like tier two team that could beat tier one teams. Like, maybe they could have been like, you know, the 11th best team or the 9th best team. That's not impossible. But the idea they were going to do runs like beat Heroic and then go to like a final of a giant event, that just was so implausible. Sadly, we didn't get to see it play out though, did we? Because they immediately lost those players. And so now they'll always be able to tearful. It's not much of a what if for me, quite frankly. Then also, I alluded to it earlier, but beyond working with the personnel, setting the style, getting practice against the opponents, figuring out how you're going to play against the opponents, you've also, a classic thing that people undervalue is you've got to establish your map pool. It's one of the reasons why I've always put Carrigan as like a GOAT contender, because the speed with which he gets competent maps is crazy. Meanwhile, I look at other teams, and there are other teams, less experienced ones, like the Nines of the World, where it's like they have like 1.5 maps in their pool, like, and it's now been months and months and months. Like, now we just know they're not going to develop a strong map pool, or they're a one trick team, or they're a fluke on one map, or that's all they had was a certain period of time where people couldn't figure out their meta on that one map. So in my opinion, this gives you a few lands, because the lands are where you're really going to test this, to establish your map pool. Because there's always a difference between having a really good win rate, that you or I or an analyst might say, hey, they should pick this, but maybe you don't feel comfortable calling on that map, or your star doesn't feel comfortable playing on that map, or you feel like on CT side, the comms and the team play isn't quite there. So unless you have crazy T-halves, you don't win. So even though you are winning the game, you know that eventually in a big pressure game, maybe you can't rely on that map. By the way, that's also why scrims matter so much to teams. A lot of their comfort and their feeling that they understand the map and can play it well doesn't come from the official result. It comes actually from how they do in scrims, when they feel like there's no pressure, when they can go through all their playbook, when they can experiment with stuff. Hence why there have been classic examples of teams actually being really good on maps in terms of official results, but not only not wanting to play them because they're uncomfortable, sometimes actively ignoring them and then not picking them when they had plenty of draft edges to do so. Like, some classic examples would be, how about the TSM squad when it was the Astralis core back in 2015, before they kicked Carrigan the next year in 2016. This was when, at one point in time, when you got to the autumn and the early winter, they were beating every great team on train. If they played like Virtus Pro or a Fnatic or something, they would just beat them. They would just outright beat these NIP. They could beat all these teams on train, but they didn't actually like the map very much. And after what happened to them at Closure of Poker, that's one of the reasons they sort of started to lose faith in Carrigan. Then you go to, in 2018, you had the Na'Vi lineup where Simple was in GOAT form. And he actually, one of his best maps, he was an absolute stud. And if, I always thought it was a great team map for Na'Vi, was train. They were phenomenal on that map. They could get loads of team runs. But for whatever reason, Zeus, as far as I can tell, just didn't feel that comfortable on the map at that point, that rework. He just wasn't he's a fan of, and he would always prefer to default into Inferno, his most classic comfortable map ever, even when Na'Vi would sometimes be, no joke, like a 50% win rate on that map. But on train, they might be like 80% win rate. They're beating all the top teams. Doesn't matter. More recent example, when Liquid was on that Grand Slam run, and they had all these great maps, Overpass, Just Two, they can go where they want. They play some Inferno because they like it. They never, ever picked Mirage. And they actually had a 15-game winning streak on this against the best teams in the world. Even though you look at their personnel and their style and their strengths, Mirage should have been right in the wheelhouse. Like, by default, they should have been a team that was picking Dust2 and Mirage, whatever they felt like it, when they thought they could outskill the opponent. And then you go back into the Inferno and the Overpass when it's more of a technical team, or you think that raw brute skill won't work. Like, instead, they just ignored Mirage. It was only other teams picking it as the decider, or their map. That meant they had to play it, and they won it. And they found out that they were really good on the map. So, again, this is why it takes time. Partly it's the psychology of the players. So let's look at some of these teams. I thought there's two ways we can do is. One, we'll look at the Liquipedia and we'll see what they did after they added a player will look like the next 3 months or three to four lands. And then we'll also even look at what happens with the rankings. Do you see in the rankings that the curve starts to go up? They start to track the trajectory of where they're headed. Remember, you don't have to get to your absolute zenith within the 3 to 4 months or the three or four lands or 3 months rather. You just have to start heading to the point that we know who you are. We understand your map pool. We understand what you're strong on. We understand your style of play. We have a sense of who the stars are, who's playing what role, who to expect what production from within your team. So we'll start with some classic teams, right? How about some of the all-time great teams when they made roster moves? So obviously the early dominant team in Counter-Strike was NIP, wasn't it? But then after they had the terrible ESWC with Fiflaren, he was fired. And what happened was they brought in Makaleli shortly before they had the major that year. DreamHack went to 2014 coming in. Obviously, people might remember they had an awesome run. They not only went to the final, they reached championship point and then lost the major to LDLC. So if we go back, Makaleli was signed on the 4th of November 2014. By the way, the other reason why this is a guideline, not a hard and fast rule, is like technically, should you count the day the guy signs? Because like, isn't that different from like when the first LAN begins? So again, you can play with it. There's a wiggle room on this, but as a general lens, you'll see what I mean. So if we go all the way back, Makaleli signed on the 4th of November 2014. So if we go back to 2014, you see, look, they began the year really well. They're doing quite well. Obviously, they hadn't been winning at the end of the year because that was in the very games time period. Came up, they won small tournaments. Then they start winning tournaments again, though. They were actually still the number one team halfway in. Then they start to fall off, even though that out of nowhere, they fluke won the major out at that point in time. But after that, nothing. They're having all this. This is the worst period ever for Nippon LAN. So then in comes Makaleli after the dreaded ESWC. Comes in 2 days after they're eliminated in, I think this is last place or second last place, at ESWC. He comes in. They play an online cup where they lose to VP. VP's still really good at the time. They actually beat them in the semis at the major. They played a VP staff cup, so who cares? That's just the staff. That's actually not NIP playing that, I don't think, which is kind of silly they've included it, but whatever. It's obviously the NIP staff versus Virtus Pro staff. Then they had the major. So the first line was the major, and that's less than a month later. They came second, almost won it. Then they had MLGX Games Aspen the next year. This is like, what, 2 months later? And this was where they came second and almost won the event. They played really well. They beat Fnatic in the semis, but they didn't win the event. Then they went and won Assembly Winter, but that's mainly because the top teams there was like Hellraisers and Titans. So it wasn't like LDLC. It wasn't Fnatic, the two best teams in the world. Dignitas wasn't even there, etc. VP wasn't. I don't think VP was at this one, actually. Let me just double check. Oh, VP was, but they got upset early. That's why they weren't in the same group. So then you have that. Then they go to the Pantamera, which is actually the last tournament they played with Makaleli. And what happened? They bombed it in the group stage and didn't do well enough. So if you look at this time period, the second he joins, this is perfect, this one, because it almost roughly 3 months is how long he played. And what did we get from this team? Right, what we got was Makaleli was a streaky player who could have maps or series where he was awesome. Aside from Assembly Winter, he didn't really like, go crazy popping off, but he was able to complement Get Right and Forest. So they had like almost enough firepower to go against anyone in the world. As a team. They could upset and beat most teams in the world. Their main enemy was LDLC. And by the way, that continued on with Envious even when they changed to Alu. That was the team they had the hardest time beating. Elsewhere, they were able to beat Fnatic. They could go back and forwards with Fnatic. And there you go. You get a sense, right? They could win a tier 1.5 event. They were a real contender for the biggest events, but couldn't quite win them. And then they had one that they just blew because it didn't work out personality-wise in the team. By the way, that's one of the reasons supposedly he was kicked. So this one works out perfectly. Now, obviously, for this one and for the Allo one, I can't do the HLTV ranking because there was no HLTV ranking at this point in time in 2014 and 2015. But after that, after McAleely goes out, after Pantamera, in comes Allo. He initially stood in for this King of Majors online cop, and then he just became a player in the team. And what happened was he signed on the 24th of February, so it's just after he stood at the King of Majors. And first event is the Major, just like McAleely. They come second. They could have won this one. This was also an incredibly close one. They beat Envious. So this time it's Fnatic they lose to, and it's Envious they beat. So you can see they're always like the top contenders. They can beat one. They narrowly lose to the other, just the way the game goes. Then they had G-Fnatic Spring Masters, where actually there was no Fnatic, and they lost to Envious this time, but they got to the finals. Wasn't that big a stacked event, though. Star Series was mega stacked. There just was no Fnatic. But even so, Envious is the team that keeps beating them. Envious beats them in the final. PGA, this is the kickoff season of PGL. They came third because they were behind TSM, who's now risen up and popped off. And who was the other team there? I think it was actually Fnatic that was in the final there. And then Envious maybe came last place. I think that's what happened at that one. So you see they've gone down to third. So they're at second, third with Allo at this point in time. And remember, he joined on the 24th, I think I said, of February. So if we go forward to March, April, May, if we go to like 24th of May, keep going forwards. So then we have the Stage 1 finals, but this was the one where you did have Fnatic, you did have TSM, you just didn't have Envious at this one. They came second here. They actually beat Fnatic at this one. Oh, it was TSM who beat them, sorry. And then they, I think they maybe beat VP in the semis, and then they played TSM in the finals and lost. So in general, you notice this lineup also isn't winning the tournaments. They're best placing sort of a second. They can beat a really big contender, but then they tend to lose to the other contender. Certain lineups just have their number. Then you go forwards. So May, we still got this, G-Fnatic Spring Masters 2. This was a stacked one, and they didn't make playoffs. Only top four made playoffs at this one. And then, yeah, let's just say that for now. Then they came top four here, but they lost to Fnatic in the semi. So you see, it's pretty consistent. Like, they're one of the best teams. They're a contender. They don't win. Same with both lineups, you'll notice. And it tends to be if they beat one of the 1A contender, the other 1B contender beats them. So they were good, but they clearly weren't the best. And of the contenders, they're a contender that heartbreakingly comes second or top four, but doesn't win the LAN. This just ended to be who they were. Spoiler, they didn't change lineup after this, right? That lineup went up to here, and they didn't change lineups after that. So what they did was they went to DreamHack Summer, just come top four this time. They won a Swedish tournament, but who cares about that one? Then they went to G-Fnatic Masters Summer 1, which is the one where there was no Fnatic and TSM, and they lost to Envious, again, for the millionth time, except this was, I think, when Envious had... No, this is before... Shocks left the lineup, from what I remember. Yes, it should be, because ESWC was the first event for the, was the last event before the shuffle. Then they went to ESWC and only made top eight. Then they went to stage two and only made top six. Then they went to the major and only made top eight. Notice they're never even making finals anymore. They don't make finals anymore until their last event with Allo, Fragback Masters Season 5. So if they'd actually known what I'm talking about in this video and he did it, they'd have known, like, we've got the best actually out of the lineup at that point. If we start to fall off at all and we show a pattern of falling off, change the lineup, because just we've seen all that we had in this team, and we didn't even hit the ceiling of winning the big lands. So now that we're falling off, it just, the lineup isn't going to work. It's not good enough. But they didn't do that, of course. Then a few years later, when I can actually do the HLTV rating, I thought years later we could do another one, which is, what about when they started to kick out the other members of the classic lineup, right? What about when they brought Rez into the team? So you might know, Rez joined on the... He was obviously an Epsilon player before. He joined on the 12th of June 2017. So if we go back to here, that's going to be after this tournament. It was an online tournament where they didn't qualify for ECS. If you look, the year had been shit before that. They'd never been at all relevant. So unsurprisingly, they kicked, I think it was Freiburg, I think it was. I think Exist got kicked last. He got kicked for Draken. And then they got in Rez, understandably, an entry for an entry was the logic. And what happened? Well, he came in on June 12th. And his first tournament was ESL Cologne, not a major this time. This was the year it wasn't a major, and this was the time when Astralis, like top third best team in the world, skipped this ESL Cologne. They go to ESL Cologne, right out the gate, they make top eight. Okay, not bad, actually. They lose in narrow fashion to Cloud9. Cloud9 actually was on a heater and went all the way to the final. And this was that summer where they had the last run with Shroud and Skadoodle. Then they go to DreamHack Open Valencia. This was not a very stacked DreamHack. They just win it fairly easily. So you see, hey, there's some potential with this res lineup. Okay. DreamHack Masters Malmo, they actually managed to come top four here and they lose to the eventual champion in G2. So, okay, there's a ceiling here. We can have like a result where we have like a big performance. E-League Premier. Losing to Envious is actually embarrassing at this point in time. This is the bad Envious. And this was a very underwhelming performance. They go back. Online stuff's not going that well. Then they go to Auckland and they have the fluke run. They have a one-off where they win it. This is the one where most famously, this is IEM Auckland Res. And what did we learn? We learned he joined all the way back in June. So let's go July, August, September. Well, that's actually after. Look, this is November that they win the one-off event. So if we go back to September, what have we actually seen from NIP at this point in time? They've played how many lands? One, two, three, four. Right. They've won a smaller land, a tier two land. They've come top four at a tier one land. They've come like group staged at a big tier one land. And then that's about it. And then they made a playoffs a big one. So if you aggregate that on all, it's sort of a top eight team, isn't it? It's a top eight team. And if they have, they can get the odd, like they can upset a big team in a series, right? Now, what no one knew is that Auckland, months later, when they stuck with the lineup, they were able to upset SK Gaming, number one team of the world, and then in a best of five, beat FaZe Clan, second best team of the world, perhaps, in the final and win the tournament. But that's all they ever did. Beyond that, after that, they go back to shit results. They're just a top eight team at any event they attend. Look, they don't win any events. You go all the way. That was a fluke. Even though we didn't see that within the original one, that wasn't representative of who NIP was. And in fact, for this one, I'll show you the rankings. So if you remember, he joined on the 12th of June. So that means we're going to go to about, let's see, 2017, remember? April, May. Just after he joined, NIP was 21st in the world because how bad it had gone. Now let's go 3 months forward. So we'll go to the 12th of September. So let's go to like... on the 11th of September, they're number seven in the world. Remember what I just said? The 3-4 lands period implies they're a top eight team with some potential, right? In the 3 months, they bounce from like 20, whatever it was, second or something, up to eighth in the world. And then they have the little fluke when they win the event where they go as high as four and then they just come back down again in the months afterwards. And look where they're going to, guys. They're going to, over this time span, over like a 6 month time span or something, it's about they're in the top eight. They can go high, they can come down, and eventually it doesn't work out. Makes perfect sense, right? Let's do another team. How about Fnatic? Obviously, I'm going to start again without the HLTV because I'm going back further in time. So Fnatic had the lineup that won the first ever major in CSGO. Remember, DreamHack Winter 2013. So if we go all the way back in time, what happened was the four players had played together in Epsilon, even made the DreamHack Summer Final and all that jazz. But it wasn't until they got Pronax as their in-game leader instead of Modi, the Swedish player, that they actually were able to take the step up and eventually they won the first major. But it was a fluke, as we'll see in these 3 months. So what we'll do is we'll go... this is the first event they played with Pronax. Pronax joined officially on the 12th of November and literally like 2 weeks later... just under, they played a LAN in China called MSI Beat It, where really the only other top team was Very Games. It was like SK Game, but they weren't that good at the time. They lost to Very Games and they came and they actually got spanked in this one and then came second at the event. So people thought, maybe they have a little bit of potential. Then they go to DreamHack Winter, the one they end up winning. Now, by the way, the only actual elite team they had to play in a series was NIP in the final. Very Games were on the inside of the bracket. They didn't face the Star of the Dragons because Carl upset them. So actually, their fluke, by the way, makes a bit more sense. Essentially, they just had to fluke the game against NIP. The game against Complexity, Sean Guest tried to like anti-strat from demos and Pronix and Stalin's mid-round in anyway. So actually, when they win this fluke, you'll see from the rest of the months that the fluke makes sense. Because like I said, this isn't actually like a true second on land because the other teams there just aren't that good generally. So what happens is you win this major out of nowhere. Now, admittedly, this is why we're going to need the time, the lands, not the time span, because the problem is the time span. If he joined on the 12th of November. Obviously, we're going December, January, February. So it'd be 12th of February, right? But if I go to 12th of February, they'd actually still have already played two lands, these two here. So I'm going to have to go to four, right? So I'm going to take this major here, and then I'm going to take Copenhagen Games, right? So I'm actually going to end up doing like 6 months, but that's because that's how long it took to do four lands. So if you look at the lands, they come second at Beat It in China, not a very deep field. They come first at the major, very impressive, but a fluke. Then they go back, they play the DreamHack Invitational, which was a 14 best of one double limb tournament. They come third place, fourth was Dignitas, second was Nip, and first was Titan, Very Games. That was what people considered the best teams in the world. So actually, they're not actually on the tip Nip, Very Games level slash Titan level, people you would assume overall, potentially. You go beyond that, this is just a show match. The major, they come top eight, but that's it. And they lose to LGB, which is Crimson Olaf, who they end up recruiting, etc., in three maps. And this is when the team started to dive a bit. Then they have one more line after that. We'll go to Copenhagen Games. They only come top eight here, and they lose to Dignitas, the players who, at this point in time, this is when it was still Fetish was the in-game leader. So you can see there's only one event where they're elite. And they're only elite because they beat NIP. That's it. They basically upset NIP. That's it. Aside from that, they were a top eight team, and they were a team that sometimes could play with the big boys, usually would lose to them, usually would beat most of the other teams out there. Let's say the teams like 5 to 10 and below in the world. So basically, they weren't actually a true contender. So what happened was, in June, after they bombed a little bit more, so they've bombed this one here, then they go, the next LAN is the DreamHack Summer, they get grouped. They don't even get out of the groups at this one, because this is the one where SK Gaming with like Peter and Delpan upset them in the group stage. They managed to win the Swedish Masters one just before they make the change. And then what happens is they fluke an IP and that's it. Then they change the lineup here. When they change the lineup, they bring in all of my Stern Crims from LGB. The first LAN is Gfinity G3. They make the semis and they lose to Titan, who's in inspired form at this point in time, with the Kenny S lineup was looking really good. Then they go to the major as their second LAN, ESL1 Cologne. What do you know? We're working with a brand new lineup, second LAN ever. They come second. They lose to NIP in close fashion. And they beat Dignitas in the semis. So you see, this is already a contender at the outset. Right out the gate, we're contending with the best teams in the world. Then we'll go to the third LAN, which is going to be Star Series. Star Series, they win, but this is where they beat Na'Vi. Na'Vi's not an elite team at this point in time. They're a dark horse, and the other top teams didn't attend. So that's not as crazy as it looks. It looks like essentially you take care of everyone not elite. Logical. And then if we're going to go to the fourth LAN with the DreamHack Invitational, this is where I think it was Olaf Meister and Crims turned up late, and then famously they got mega spanked by Titan, who may indeed have had Kaylee cheating at this LAN, and Kenny S was potentially the best player in the world at the time, and existence famously always called well against specifically Pronax teams. So if you look at this period in time, so you make like right out the gate, you're contending, then you almost win the major as your second event, then you win a smaller event, and then you blow this one, but you make semis of an event where things go really badly in general. This is an elite team. That's what this tells you. This is an elite team with real chances to win any tournament and beat any team. And what happens beyond this time period? Right after this, they start winning everything. Because the next LAN is Face It League 2. They win that LAN. Then they win ESWC. They win that LAN as well. Then they win Fragment Masters 3. They win that LAN. And they're always beating the number 2 team, LDLC, all the time here. They don't win the major after that because they played LDLC and they forfeit the game after the Olaf boost. After this, they go on to become what we then knew was the greatest team in history, with the next two majors back-to-back. Loads of LANs. Establish an era. Probably set the prize money record, I'd imagine, at the time. All that jazz. So you can see the difference. The first one was a fluke. Then Olaf Meister and Crims isn't a fluke, and the potential is crazy and indeed gets delivered upon. I mean, what more do you want? It's banging, right? Then let's do another example. Let's go with the Luminosity team. Remember the one that won the major and then became SK Gaming and won the major back to back. So we're talking about the Fallen Fur, Cold Zera, Taco, and FNX lineup with Zeus as coach. So as people will know, except they don't remember this, Fur, Fallen, and Cold Zera, the three you think are the best players, actually were already together. They've been together a few months. They've even played a major together. It just wasn't a team that could ever be a contender, go deep, or win, believe it or not. It was actually getting in FNX, Zeus as the coach, and Taco that completed the way the team played, and then they became elite very quickly, as you'll see. So what happened was, the team, before they were winners, back in 2015... They signed Zeus's coach, FNX and Takua's players, on the 23rd of November. So if we go to November, that's just before Face It League Stage 3, which is basically DreamHack Winter. It was held at DreamHack Winter. So this is when the lineup's gone and done nothing at this LAN here. They've done absolutely fuck all at the IM San Jose on home soil because they lived in North America and in California at the time. So they make the lineup change. And at this first LAN, right out the gate, they come second. And they beat a bunch of the world's, basically all the world's best teams except Fnatic. And even Fnatic, they get a map off. They beat NIP, Envious, TSM. These are the best teams in the world at the time. They beat them and come second. So already, ooh, unless that's a fluke, there might be potential. Oh, but okay. Immediately afterwards, the next LAN, they only come fifth to sixth. So they lose to Na'Vi, who's like an elite team, but they haven't won the big events yet. So okay, fair enough. Maybe it was a fluke. Let's keep going, shall we? Then you go, and then you have... Forget the Max 5 invitation. That was a Brazilian Orny LAN. That's where Cold Zero farmed. But you come to Starseas. This had all the best teams in the world attending this event. And they come top four, but they lose to Fnatic, who's winning all the events. And even then, it's still close. And at the event, they beat Na'Vi in a series. So, and I think they also beat maybe TSM Astralis. So you could already see, hey, this is a team they're having trouble with specifically Fnatic and Na'Vi. But aside from that, they're the only teams that are really consistently going to beat them. They're right in the mix. They're actually an elite team. That was... If anything, it wasn't a fluke the second at DreamHack, because the fluke, if anything, is looking like it was actually the Pro League run, and even then, maybe because they had to play Na'Vi in the round of six. So you go beyond that. So let's see. Let's see how many lands. That was 1, 2, 3. And then you have DreamHack Open Leipzig, where they make it to the final, and they lose to Na'Vi. So the first four lands, sure. Basically, the only thing stopping us winning lands is Na'Vi and Fnatic, right? These are the two teams that are hardest to play. And at the time, who are the two best hit players in the world? Olaf Meister of Fnatic, Guardian of Na'Vi. Now, obviously, those two players get injured. And so at the major, right after this, I mean, you had IM Katowice first before the injury. This time, you narrowly beat Guardian's Na'Vi, but you lose to Fnatic 3-0. Then you go to the major. You don't have to play Fnatic because they lose. Olaf has the injury and they lose to TSM in the Astralis in the quarters. You make it to the final where you play Na'Vi, but Guardian has his injury and you beat them 2-0. There's no real Na'Vi in Fnatic, and so you win the event. You win the major. You become the best team in the world because those two teams are crippled and those players aren't quite as good, and it takes them time to get back to the top level. Olaf Meister never got there. Guardian did, obviously, especially with FaZe later on. So you look at that time span. The first four lands, because it has to be more than 3 months for this one. Oh, no, 3 months also would probably sort of work. You actually get a very good sense, like I say, of who they are. And beyond that, when the two teams they couldn't beat got eliminated in terms of their strength, they then are the team that dominates the year. So then you keep going on. How about if we then go, because this was the period, if you remember, when obviously after this, they swapped to SK Gaming, didn't they? So they swapped to SK Gaming around here and they win the major. They're still a top team. Look, they're always top four at these LANs, but the problem is they're always top four. So after that, after E-League Season 2, after they were eliminated from this tournament, famously, FNX gets kicked. So essentially, Astralis with Glaive, by the way, broke up the SK dynasty. In comes, initially, Fox for the first two lands, ECS and the Major. And then after that, Phelps from Immortals joins. So Phelps from Immortals joins on the 5th of February, so just after... They've come second, semis rather, at the major. The first event is DreamHack Masters Las Vegas, and they come second. Now, admittedly, Astralis and VP, the two best teams, were on the other side of the bracket, so it was beating North that got them to the final. But actually, North was having a great run this one. But you can see already, oh no, we're right back in position to win again with Phelps. It's working out. In fact, his stats even are pretty good. Then you go after that, they bomb two lands in a row. Oh my goodness, they bomb Katowice, just get grouped, and they don't get through the Swiss system of Star Series. Oh, wow, was it a fluke? Was the Phelps lineup not any good? Then they go to CS Summit 1 with not that many good teams except Gambit, beat everyone. Then they go to Sydney. They beat everyone, including FaZe in the best of five, and become the number one team of the world. And then after that, they go to ECS. Let's see. Sydney. Then they do ECS Finals, where they only lose to the champions in the semis, G2. Then they do, this is obviously, this becomes part of the win 5 out of 6 lands. So if you go back, let's do the first four lands. The first four lands were Vegas, Katowice, Star Series, Summit, and then Sydney. And by the time you've done these, like second at the big LAN, win a smaller LAN, win a big LAN with all the best teams, and have two where you blew it, what you realise about this team is they can beat anyone. They can win the big lands. They're one of the best teams. Sometimes they can get upset. But in general, it takes elite teams to beat them. And you go look in the summer, that's the story of the summer. Even the major, it's just because Astralis beat them with inspired performance that they didn't get a deeper finish and or win that major. And they were a really solid team. Even at Malmo took an epic performance from Liquid, and then G2 actually was supposed to lose this one. But then Fur and Phelps decided to fuck up in a banana. But then you start to see the problems. So you could see this was a strong, strong team. Later in the year, though, when it had gone off the boil with Phelps, they then brought in Boltz, right? So Boltz came in on the 31st. Oh, let me just quickly actually check that one. I'll show you this one actually for Luminosity. I forgot to do that before. So Luminosity was the 23rd of November. Let's see what we can get here. 24th of November, they are 14th in the world. And then if we go December, January, February, we'll go to the 24th of February. At which point in time, they're fifth in the world. Now, bearing in mind, this is when they can't beat Na'Vi and Fnatic consistently. They can sort of beat Na'Vi half the time now. Fifth sounds about right. And look, the arrow, look, it's going up. It's consistently going up. So this tells us this lineup is working, and we know quite a lot about this team, the composition of it, who's good in it, what it's going to take from them, etc., to win. Then you go later when they got the Phelps lineup. And if we go to that, so I said that was on the 5th of February in 2017, so let's go to 9th of February, 2nd of February. Let's just go 2nd of February, the 36th. Oh, this is Luminosity. It's because we need to swap to SK. That's why. That makes sense then. So 9th of February, oh, it's 2016, 2017. Let's see. I've got a choice. 2nd. Remember, because of the old results, they were still a top team because of the lag. So they were second around there. But you look at the next few months, even with the bad performances, they just stay around third. They're still really good. Go to May, they're third. And then what happens was, then they took off. Then the performances, because the potential was proven to be there, then they're number one for the rest. And then they get in Phelps. Phelps comes in on... at that period, then we go to the Boltz one. So Boltz joined the team on the 31st of October. He was loaned, if you remember, technically he was still in the contract with the Immortals until the next year. So 31st of October is going to be after the Epicenter. So they literally won a LAN and then still said, and then, so actually that just makes me realize that this must mean that they actually had him. This just shows that when I Googled it and it said 31st, they must actually have allowed it before, because he definitely played this LAN too. So they get him in the lineup after they've had like some slight a fall off where Liquid's beating them and they're just falling off the scene, etc. This obviously the humiliating one going up 9th to 12th at E-League. But they bring in Boltz. They win Epicenter out of the gate, stacked LAN. Then they go and they have IEM Auckland, and it's only the eventual champions who beat them at this one, by the way, and they played really well in this one. This is where it took IEM Auckland Rez to beat them, and they couldn't play FaZe in the final and beat them as a result. Then they go to Blast Copenhagen, and they beat the Astralis one where Dupree was AWPing and Device couldn't play. Then they go to Pro League, and they win that. Right, so let's go back then. So he was signed on 31st, but we'll say the 20th. Well, I think he was at this event anyway, so we'll just... See, it was around the... Let me just double check. I almost certainly played this fucking LAN. Let me have a look here. Yes, Boltz played this LAN. I don't know why it's listed as that, so bizarrely. So if we count just before this, and then we'll say we go November, December, January, right, that takes us... We've got won a LAN, top four a LAN, lost to the champions, won another LAN, and then made top four at the major. But this was on where they had to use Phelps, if you remember. So if anything, we saw the Phelps one wasn't quite as good. And then obviously then they fell off the boil after that. You got a sense of what this team was capable of. Now, this is maybe an exception because after this, they then fell apart. They actually became shit after that and it didn't work. And then eventually they changed out to TV2K. And then way later, Tarik came in as well. So if we go and look at the lineup with Boltz, Boltz came in on roughly 31st. So we'll go to like 20. Let's see. We'll just do late October, basically. 23rd. Let's say he came out on the 23rd of October, shall we? They were number three in the world. They go up again immediately. They hang around there. And they're the number one team. You get to see everything they're all about, right? We'll do one more. And we're going to do a modern example now, which is we're going to do Team Liquid. We'll do the modern Team Liquid, the one post online era. So how about when Nitro joined? Because before that, with the Fallen Shock sign, it was whatever, wasn't it? Like they had that miracle win inexplicably somehow over Na'Vi, but then they still only finished fourth at the event because Na'Vi got the revenge. So what happened is Nitro came in on the 15th of January. So this is before any of the lands. So Nitro comes in, they bomb the groups, not that great. They bomb Katowice, not that great. They bomb Pro League. Well, they make playoffs at Pro League, but don't go any further. They go to the RMR and make it to the Major. At the Major, they don't do anything. So, okay, Nitro joins. That's not that great, is it? But you have to remember, this is when all the rosters have already changed. So what that actually shows you, in my opinion, if we go and look over here, is so Nitro joined on January. So it's in, he joined just after they're at their worst place ever in the world. If you go and look, they are all the way down at 223 in the world when he joins. February, March, April. Number 13. They're already heading in the right direction. Even if the LAN results don't show it in terms of placing, the game is starting to get together. They already had the run where, like, you can see here, they were able to, like, at least make playoffs. At least they could qualify to the Major. Then, how about when they brought Yekindar in, the effect that had? So Yekindar joined, he was also on loan, in early July of 2022. So if we go there, it was before Cologne. So this is when they were sort of irrelevant at Dallas. They didn't do anything. He came in for Cologne, they made playoffs. It was only a very close loss to Inspired Sun Pius performance that stopped them going top four and maybe the final. Then they went to Blast Fall Groups, won them. Went to Pro League, narrowly lost in the final. So there we go. There's one LAN, two LAN, not fully, obviously. Let's say that's the second LAN, depends on how we're counting them. Then we had the Major. They almost made it to the Swiss system, but slightly flunked. And then they had four finals where they went semis, but lost to the eventual champions. So you look at these LAN results overall. The point is they can almost win, but not quite. They're competitive with the best teams, but they also can have like a flaw that can be a bit embarrassing occasionally. That makes sense, right? Isn't that who Liquid was? Then we'll go look at the rankings. So if we go, like I said, he joined like early July. So early July, they were like 15th in the world. And then we go August, September, October. So let's go October, early October. In early October, they're up to number four in the world. The system works, boys. This model slash lens just works generally. Because here's the thing. People are going to think, yeah, but what about, like, you know, Mouse 2019? So, okay, Mouse 2019 was the one where it was the lineup with Woxic and Rops and Frozen and Chris J and Carrigan was the IGL and Ragin was the coach. And initially, they were just sort of like an also run, like a bottom of the top 10 type team. And they didn't really have the chance to win tournaments or be that competitive. They could just play like the odd series well early on in tournaments. Then what happened was, they didn't change nothing. They had position and role swaps for Rops and Frozen, the young players who needed to be the stars and studs, as well as Woxic. And then also, this had Carrigan, maybe the greatest like player ever at developing his stars, getting a solid map pull and calling mid-round in. So they had a sort of an outlier that allowed them to make this incredible leap up that otherwise wouldn't be possible. How about Vitality last year? Remember, they had the one where they brought in Sphinx and they won Pro League, but then they struggled a bit after that, including at the Major. And then it was only this year where suddenly they got going again. They became the best team in the world. They won Rio. They won the Major, obviously. They were second at Blast. So, like, what happened there? That took a long time. It's the same one. Well, in that one, you had Zonic, the greatest coach of all time, who's actually in position to, like, help make these changes. And eventually, he figures out a style switch, playing a bit more up-tempo, and how to use Sphinx, one of the young stars, differently, and they become the best team in the world. So, it's not... There are exceptions, but the exceptions prove the rule slash model slash analytical lens works. Remember, this isn't a hard and fast rule. It's more of a lens slash a guideline. And I could have done this video years ago, but you get the point. In this game, CSGO, it's 3 to 4 lands or 3 months, roughly, depending on which one makes more sense. Teams who ignore that, you'll see they end up spinning their wheels. They waste time, they waste potential, they waste individual form. So I'm thinking of like the Vitality lineup in 2021 where you got to LAN and Ziwu looked like one of the best LAN players in the world, but the team was just too bad because Masuta was all right on LAN and Kyojin was terrible. So you didn't have enough firepower, but they kept that lineup for so much of that year instead of going international or making some crazy big gambles. gamble. Then you had Furia last year. You already could see Quezada was one of the best players in the world. You could already see some upset potential, but they couldn't win LANs, and they so rarely ever even made a final. But they waited and waited and waited and waited, and then who knows, now Quezada's form's even been in and out, and he's had real life stuff going on, and the team's fallen apart. How about Heroic? Even though the team play was excellent and they were a strong team, when they weren't winning LANs, they probably did stick with Refresh for too long. At the time, we all thought maybe it's because the synergy of the five players. It turns out you brought Yabby in, and it was immediately a side grade and then became actually a big upgrade. If you'd have brought Yabby or someone like another Dane in maybe 6 months earlier, maybe you start winning earlier and extend your window to actually be number one. They only became number one properly, for my money, with Refresh in the LAN era. How about a classic one would be Envious in 2016, when obviously KO left slash got kicked. They brought in Devil, and it didn't work. It just didn't work. And it was obvious it didn't work, but they just stuck with it no matter what and tried to force it and waited so much that it wasn't until next year that they made the French shuffle after the major and we got the G2 super team finally. These guys wasted all that time of like Kenny is still being good, Hobart Happy still being half decent, and BK being a very good player. What a wasted era. So again, this is just the principle, but I think you'll find it really checks out. To paraphrase the legendary DMX, I just love when y'all in my Patreon crew give me a bigger piece of cake to chew a hole through. Because obviously, one of the ways I'm able to support myself and make content like I do on this channel is thanks to my Patreon community and the likes of Ahmed Haju, Frisky, Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Animosity, Jensen Gore, Tobias Bernasconi, Tosh, Toucan, and always, always a special thanks goes out to my main man, Jerky's Minion. Do you want to ask a question in my video AMA? Do you want to suggest a topic or a guest to interview? Maybe you want teasers, find out who I've already interviewed in upcoming episodes. Or do you want to take part in one of those lengthy online discussions that I do with my top patrons? Well, if any of these perks or more appeal to you, then put your money where your mouth is and join the Skrilluminati today via the Patreon link below.